Members, we're going to call the State Government Finance Committee meeting to order. And Representative Petersburg, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes as presented.
Okay, Representative Petersburg moves the February 11th, 2015 minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes for February 11th, 2015 are approved. Members, we have with us today the Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. We're going to go over a couple of items here. We're going to start off with the FTE report. If you'll look in your packet, there is a report. I had asked the department to give us this data because this issue has been something that has piqued my interest for the last couple of years in seeing what the trend has been for state government in FTEs. So if you look in your packet and get yourself a little bit familiar with that, we're going to have the commissioner kind of walk us through this, and then we're going to open it up to questions. I think what we'll do is, depending on how things go, we will probably stop our discussion on the FTEs at 9:45, and then we'll move on to the commissioner pay raises at that point. But we're first going to start off with the FTEs. And with that, commissioner, if you want to join us, please. Welcome, Commissioner. Can you state your name for the record and who you represent?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you, Myron Franz, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget.
And, Commissioner, we had asked your department to put together this spreadsheet just to kind of give us an historical perspective. I do want to point out to members, if you look at quarter one of 2012, you're going to see that there is a dip in the FTEs there. That has, as I've been told by both the nonpartisan staff and MMB, that is due to the government shutdown from 2011, and the results didn't show up until quarter one of 2012. So just kind of be mindful of that. Commissioner, can you just walk us through the history of the FTEs, and then we'll open it up to questions. If you can be brief to 5 minutes, and if you can do it less, that would be even better. So.
Madam Chair, members, I'll try to be as brief as possible. The FTE count that you have in front of you, the spreadsheet, calculates the number of full-time equivalents. Now, the FTE counts are calculated by the number of hours worked at an agency, not by the number of employees. So the hours worked do not equal a head count per se. For example, two half-time employees equal one FTE. Also, for example, the other day in Ways and Means Committee, we were talking about the discussion of overtime at the state's mental health facilities. The overtime calculation is also included in these calculations. So once again, you have to be careful in terms of the FTE count, whether you're getting in terms of seasonal changes, overtime payments, but it's not a headcount per se. The quarters on the data sheet are based on the fiscal year. So if you look at the very top, quarter one, 2008, that is the July, August, September of fiscal year 2008. So that would be July, August, September of July or 2007. So you have to be careful when you move around these, at least I do, in comparing quarters from one year to the other. As I mentioned, there is some variation. DNR employs part-time or seasonal people in the summer. The Department of Revenue employs seasonal people during tax season. And there are several areas inside this that are outside the scope of the executive branch. For example, the courts are included in this list. The other constitutional officers are included, boards, commissions, legislative areas such as the Office of Legislative Auditor and the Legislative Coordinating Commission, among others. So one of the things that if you take a look at the way that we were looking at the changes and trying to make a comparison, we took the last quarter of, I should say quarter two of fiscal year 2011. That's October, November, December of 2010, and compared that to the last quarter that we just got information on, which is quarter two of 2015. That is four full years, and as we talk through this, as Madam Chair has mentioned, you have to be careful comparing one quarter to another quarter. But if you look at that, the first 4 years of the governor's administration, with those numbers, you see that the general fund grew by about 54 FTEs, The federal funds actually decreased by about 389 FTEs, and the other funds grew by a total of about efficiencies, and we can see some reductions. But I'll have to get with Commissioner Baden to give you his sort of timeline, what he sees coming down the next few years.
Well, and I think maybe the better way to ask this question, Commissioner, is, you know, I think everyone expected that Minute was going to grow in size because they were taking on the ITs that were part of all these different agencies. But yet, where can you point in the spreadsheet where it would show that the agencies themselves had a drop in FTEs in result of shifting those employees over to Minute? If you can point me in the direction of where we would see that, if it's, you know, FTE by FTE, or how that transpired, I think that would be helpful. How many went from one place to the next, and kind of get that data, I think that would be helpful for me to see.
Madam Chair, we'll get that. I think Mr. Intermill can give you one example of that, I think, here, but we can get more detailed information for you.
That would be great.
Certainly, Madam Chair. If you look at MMB, for instance, in the four-year period that the Commissioner referenced earlier, there's a reduction in all funds of 58.6 FTEs. I don't have the exact figure on how many FTEs are attributable to Minute, but I do know that it's a substantial portion of that. So I would venture a guess of about 40 FTEs did transfer to Minute.
Okay. And it would just be helpful to know how that reduction took place in the agencies then that had those people leave. But I think it had to have been more. You just said 40 FTEs?
Of, Madam Chair, 40 from MMB.
Okay, just for MMB. Yeah. Are you able to get it, though, for each agency for me?
Madam Chair, we can work to get that. That may take some time because we'll have to work with Minute and each agency. But
okay.
we can work on that for you.
That would be helpful because I know they went up. I think they were, I think they were at 250 and they went up to 700. So I'd like to know where that is reflected in the FTEs. Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. As a follow-up along this line, I did meet with Minute and was told that in their current plan, they have no plans for a drawdown. And I'm just wondering if that's consistent with what you've been told in meetings, and if we could just get to the bottom of, do they have any intent on actually drawing down duplicative employees? Because I've been told that they have no plan at the moment.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Representative. I think the discussions we have been very preliminary. I think the key is the efficiencies that the Minute is looking for in terms of becoming more efficient, taking on more and more tasks, enterprise-wide tasks, doesn't necessarily involve reducing an FTE. The key is to make sure that those tasks are done efficiently and effectively with the right kind of controls, the right kind of security. So there are a number of efficiencies that go into that. So I don't have a particular projection of what their plans are, both in terms of the efficiencies or the FTE count.
Madam Chair, follow-up. Commissioner, I appreciate that. I work in the IT industry, and I had a fairly frank conversation with the folks from Minute, and we did talk about some of the duplicative roles that they actually do have there, and they essentially admitted that there are some duplicative roles. And I'm just wondering, from a managing the overall budget perspective and trying to help the folks in Minnesota feel like they're getting the best bang for their buck, is that a policy that we find to be a wise one, to not pursue duplicative employees being, whittled down so that we can actually look the folks in Minnesota in the eye and say that we're doing a good job for you?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, I certainly didn't say that was our policy. I simply indicated I'm not aware of their plans at this point. No, and I appreciate your expertise and your input. I think you're right. From managing an enterprise as large as the state of Minnesota, it's critical to make sure that we look for those efficiencies and we reduce duplicative efforts. You know, there's nothing more frustrating than for any of us to see that happen, and I can't imagine that's not part of what they want to do. And so I think that our policy is to make sure we run government as effectively as we can, and that includes efficiency. So your ideas and your suggestions are very helpful and very welcome. I think that the citizens of Minnesota expect exactly as you say.
Okay, Representative Nash. Representative Runback.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Commissioner. Sort of following on Representative Nash's comments, just in a broader way, are there agencies which over the couple decades where we've had a lot of technology enhancements, that we should expect to see, you know, reductions, sizable reductions in workforce because of the efficiencies, the added efficiencies, and the improved productivity. I mean, I'm thinking of the banking industry, which so many industries have downsized tremendously because they're able to use people more efficiently. Do we have any candidates for that, you know, within the state government? Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, another excellent question. In fact, I'll speak to my prior life as Revenue Commissioner. One of the things that the prior administration did was to invest in, some of you were here and remember, the investment in the integrated tax system, the GEN tax system that was begun, I think it was in 2008, 2009, at the Department of Revenue, a sophisticated major capital investment in terms of the technology and the infrastructure that went into that. And Department of Revenue has been working the last 7-8 years implementing and adding all the different tax types to that complicated integrated tax system so it works better and more effectively. And one of the things that you'll note is the Department of Revenue is one of those agencies that is, I think the 4-year period I was talking about is about down 100 employees. And that's not all just transfers to Minute. I think part of the efficiencies that we're seeing in the Department of Revenue are where they're able to process returns more effectively, more efficiently. Obviously, you know, as our system is not as simple as we might all like it to be, so there's only so much you can do given the complex tax structure that we have, but Department of Revenue is one of those candidates where investment in capital in IT infrastructure is paying off, is making things more efficient at the department, and I think overall has seen an overall reduction in the number of people. But, you know, one of the things that happens with any agency and with any mission, even at the Department of Revenue, is there's this there's a growing need for more and more services. So, part of the problem with the Department of Revenue experience is as the IRS starts kind of pulling back some of their resources and some of the people they have available to answer questions, as we start getting more of those questions at the Department of Revenue. So that sometimes there's a transfer. So I think the Department of Revenue is one of those areas where you've seen investment, more efficiency, and an overall reduction in FTEs, but I don't have the exact numbers. But I'm sure there are some more, and I'll be happy to look for some of those and talk to you about those.
Representative Runbeck. Madam Chair, thank you. Perhaps you know, maybe you don't know, but I'm looking at transportation and the numbers there, and over the 4 years, I mean, they've up and down by 200-300. Is there a reason for that? And you know, what is behind it? Just seems so inconsistent, just continually shifting.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think one of the things that there are seasonal employees, number one, at the Department of Transportation. But the other thing, too, is, you know, and this happens, the other thing that we have to also remember that we're dealing with an aging workforce, too, and some of the things, sometimes we see numbers of increasing retirements that we have to fill for. But beyond the seasonal changes and the retirements, I'm not aware of any other. Do you have any more information?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, I would echo the Commissioner's comments. You know, it's often said that in Minnesota there are two seasons. You've got winter and construction season, and that's what you see in the FTE numbers and the fluctuation.
Representative Rembeck.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious. When I look at this type of data, I'd like to do a thorough analysis. So could you tell me, do we have FTEs grown at all over time because we stopped having outside contractors do some work, so we internalize that work because it's cheaper and it saves the state money?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, well, that's something, Representative, we'd have to look at. I offhand, I don't know, but I think you're starting to peel back the onion here a little bit, and it is every agency has its own story, so to speak. So I'm not aware of what. I'm sure that's happened some, but I'm not aware of where that's happened.
Representative Schultz.
Madam Chair, so it looks like from quarter 108, we had 35,730 FTEs, and in this last quarter one of 2012, we had 31,686. So we are about, what, $40 billion budget overall. Is that right? How many, what would be a private sector equivalent number of FTEs for a $40 billion corporation? Does anyone know?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Runbeck, I appreciate the line of thought that you're on, because in the private sector, what they've been doing is doing a lot more with less technology. Obviously, advancements have helped a lot. And what I'm seeing here from the 2008 to now, we've had a 2,000 increase in FTEs. And the governor is requesting for fiscal year 2016 another 1,663 FTEs, for fiscal year 2017 another 2,378 FTEs, for fiscal year 18 another 2,270 FTEs, and for fiscal year 19 another 2,474 FTEs. That's significant, and given the fact that Minnesota in our budget situation has been back and forth for quite some time, what's kind of the plan to be able to sustain that level of FTEs? What warrants that need? You talked about maybe increased demand, but I'm a little concerned that we aren't utilizing technology like we see in the private sector to minimize our costs as a state. And Commissioner, I'm going to pause a moment, too, and I think Ms. Roberts has some data as far as what is the average cost for a single FTE for the state. I don't know if you have that offhand.
Madam Chair and members, I think Mr. Intermill will probably be able to correct me, I think, because I believe it was around 68,000.
Mr. Andrew,
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I missed the question.
The cost of the average cost of an FTE for the state is how much?
Yep. Madam Chair, it's approximately $68,000 all in, so including benefit costs and insurance, FICA, salary.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Commissioner, the question I guess I have for you. On these increases for fiscal years 16 and 17, we're looking at about 4,000 roughly. Yeah, about 4,000. What's the thought process on that? How are we going to manage that? You know, what is the trajectory that we're putting our state on as far as FTEs?
Madam Chair.
Have you done any studies that show that trajectory?
Madam Chair, yes, we've looked at that. I think one of the keys that increase that you represent, I don't have the exact figures, does include the governor's proposal for the transportation funding. So there's a large percentage of that increase relates to the transportation funding packages he's presented, and also includes the legacy funds, additional employees required by our projected legacy fund growth over the next 2 to 3, 4 years. So there's part of what we have to do there that is mandated in those proposals, and also we have additional legal requirements through some of the different the Jensen settlement issues and the sex offender program are also areas where we are required by law to add additional staffing, or we're at least projecting that being added. So those are a couple of the areas, but we can break that down in more detail if you'd like and kind of present to you what are the different areas of growth and why we're projecting the growth in the different areas. But those are just a couple that come to mind.
And, you know, Commissioner, too, it'd be helpful if the department has ever done an analysis of what's the right size, if you've ever done that. I think that would be helpful. I'm going to be doing some homework on that myself, too. When I look at these numbers, though, cause some of the big winners, you mentioned some of them. Another one is the Pollution Control Agency. DNR is another big winner, too. So I'd be kind of interested in why. I can understand some of them, but there's other ones that I'm kind of surprised at, and I'd be interested in kind of knowing the thought process on that. I've got Representative Albright and Howe. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, and this is kind of just following up from what the Chair asked, but I also look at the outliers. And if you take a look at corrections, human services, natural resources, pollution control, and transportation, that's 70% of the increase in fiscal year 16 for the FTE count. I'm wondering if, just off the top of your head, and I'm not going to hold you anything, but I'm just curious in terms of the all funds budget, what those five agencies would utilize as their budget, their agency budget in comparison to the all funds. And where I'm driving at is there any correlation between the representative percentage of their agency budget to the all funds budget to the number of FTEs that is being requested in the governor's budget in response to, as you've said, his initiatives for transportation, or in response to the corrections in terms of court order increase in the FTE count. So what I'm trying to do as Chair Anderson is trying to get a correlation model established in terms of not so much a justification, but just an understanding and clarification in terms of, is there a correspondent FTE count increase for the increase in their budget or the representation of their agency budget to the overall all funds budget? But I just have one question, and it's more of a practical standpoint because you already mentioned about, you know, the all-in fee or cost for an employee. But from a practical standpoint, we have to house these people in offices. And so from the transportation's perspective, when you're looking at 468, dare say I wouldn't want to be the 0.39 person, where are we going to put these people? And not so much just in 16, but then in 17, 18, 19, I mean, you're taking a look at an incredible momentum of people that are going to require services on a daily basis to do their job. And so what's the thought process in terms of building space and what have you in terms of just to make sure they do their job? And to the point of what Chair Anderson said is, what are their jobs? What are the job descriptions that are being proposed, particularly with transportation? Are those engineers? Are those surveyors? Are those supervisors? What is the breakdown in terms of the job classifications that are incumbent on that number? And then a follow-on, rambling a little bit here, but what happens if the transportation budget, as the governor, the governor's office has proposed, is not adopted? What effect does that have on some of the planning that you put in place and you're running on? So I don't know if either one of you want to comment to those questions. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, I certainly understand your concern about the numbers analysis you're requiring at first. I want to make sure you were talking a little bit about the all funds and the different departmental budgets versus the general fund, and how they're affecting one another and as they grow or don't grow. I just want to make sure I understand your concern.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think we need to compare apples to apples. And so if we're, particularly with transportation, because we're not dealing with just state appropriations, we're dealing with federal appropriations and adjudication of federal programs that would, as it would relate to transportation projects, I think we have to figure an all funds budget approach as opposed to just that which is from the state, because that really isn't the true picture in terms of what they'd be working on.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, well, thank you, Representative, for that clarification. In terms of the housing, one of the things, the process that I think the commissioners do in presenting their budgets is to make sure that in preparing a budget for 2016-2017 is that they're able to not only pay for the additional employees, but they know where they're going to be, where they're going to sit, or where they're going to be located. So that certainly would be part of their requirement that they have with respect to whether they need to add a few more cubes or an office or whether they can fit into existing space. So I know that's part of the planning process for 2016-2017. But we can look at some of the other issues. I think we, in terms of the governor's initiative on transportation, if that doesn't occur, obviously we are trying to be mindful of whatever this legislature intends to do with respect to the governor and the budget and coming to some agreement about how we go forward. So we are trying to be mindful of looking at different scenarios. But at this point, I think it's a little too early for us to predict, obviously, what's going to happen. But we will be trying to plan for different scenarios, and depending upon what the legislature and the governor agree to as a final budget.
Okay. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up to that, in terms of your planning, and understanding that you can't just turn a light switch on or off in terms of putting these people to work and giving them a pencil and a and a calculator and some sizey, you know, print. Has there, and this is not to, you know, it's not a gotcha question, but I would trust that you're not pre-planning and kind of pre-packaging some of these people for job descriptions. We're not kind of greasing the wheels, if you will, for these types of positions until the budget is approved, correct?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, obviously we were not authorized to do that until they're actually appropriated and put them in place. I mean, we look at scenarios, we plan as best we can, but there's not really much we can do until there's an appropriation from the legislature. Okay.
And then Representative Howe has a question, and then we're going to move on to the next segment that we have. So Representative Howe.
And my question just comes to, I'm looking for the clarification on something you said previously on those that are required by law or proposed. And is there any way for us as a committee to know what positions are required by law or are just proposed by the agency? It would be good for us to know where we can flex and where we really, if we flex, we're going to really cause some pain in trying to accommodate and allow the agency to do what they need to do to meet the requirements of the law. And I don't know if you can establish that, if you know, but that would go a long ways to helping us know where that goes.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, one of the things that I know that the different agency budgets do try to do is to articulate those areas, for example, in the Jensen settlement area, providing those services, and also in the sex offender program. I'm sure that the Department of Human Services will be able to articulate generally where we see those legal requirements making us make changes as required by law. And so I think when you see those budget preparation or presentations, you'll be able to see where those go. But I'll make sure that they're aware of your concern to really identify what we think the legal requirements are versus what we're projecting as a budget. And sometimes they're a little fuzzy, frankly. It's hard.
Representative Howe.
It would be good to identify those, too. You know, what we think is the fuzzy thing that, yeah, and what we know is has to be there. So we can, because we do, a thing that this committee, we dwell in the fuzzy stuff all the time. So I think that would help us.
Okay. With that, members, I'd like to direct you to, I don't know if there's actual documents in here. I think there is some data on the salaries. Commissioner, I have a couple of questions. There were some requests for information that I had asked for during the Ways and Means Committee. First off is you said that you'd be able to get me the data on raises for deputy commissioners and assistant commissioners. And I'd like that for the last 3 years, so 2013, 2014, and then if there were any raises here in 2015. So I appreciate your email that you sent me last night that you would be able to provide answers to that. Do you have that data with you right now?
Madam Chair, I do not have that data yet. We're working on getting that request to you. I'm not sure when we'll have it, but it'll be very shortly, but I don't have it today yet.
And Commissioner, do you have a ballpark figure of how much the deputy commissioners and the assistant commissioners received in raises? Was it a 5% increase or more?
Madam Chair, it's a little bit more complicated than that in terms of the time the over the different years. So I can't really summarize it in that way because I haven't been able to look at the data and look at it myself. So I'll have to wait until I see the data to make that kind of an overall summary statement.
And Commissioner, did they receive raises in 2013, 2014, and in 2015?
Madam Chair, I believe they received raises beginning, I think, in 2013, 2014, and they may or may not receive any in 2015, but 2013 and 2014 they did, yes.
Okay. Well, I'll wait for that and share that with the members. The other question that I had asked you at the Ways and Means Committee was a copy of the Hay Report. Can you just tell me when was the Hay Report? I know it was requested in 2013 to do it. When was it completed?
Madam Chair, the Hay Report, the final report came to the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget in April of 2014. And it was at that point that the MMB began analyzing that report and also utilized some other consultants to help us deal with that report, but it was presented to MMB on April 2014.
And Commissioner, with it being done in April 2014, who was the vendor and who were your consultants that helped you to go through it?
Madam Chair, the Hay Group is the name of the company that provided the compensation report. I think I've got the name somewhere. But there's the report that was prepared by the Hay Group, and also we had another consultant, I don't remember their name, that we also hired. I'll have to get that for you.
And the other consultant, did they provide you with a document, or was it, how did that work, and can we have a copy of their consultation to you? And when can I expect to see the Hay report too?
Madam Chair, the Hay Group report, the compensation report of April 2014, is currently classified as non-public data. We have, based on your request, we have contacted the company. Part of what happens, the statute states that if there's employee survey data and the company requests that, makes the request that there's proprietary data within the report, then it can remain non-public data. We've contacted the Hay Group and asked them if they will release their claim of proprietary data so that we can in turn release a report to you. We've been discussing that with them the last few days. That's why I called you last night to let you know the status. We are working with them, and we have preliminary discussions. I think we're making progress where we hope to be able to convince them to release that claim, but their right of proprietary data. And if we do, we'll be able to get the contract amended, I think, within days, not weeks, but several days, and then get that report to you as soon as we get it. We get that if they agree to it, but I hope that's very soon. I don't know if there was a report from the other consultant. Let me get that information in terms of who that was and what services they provided and when. I don't have that in front of me. I just know that they also consulted with the MMB as part of getting that the Hay Group report.
Okay, and that would be helpful. I appreciate your efforts on that. If nothing else, a redacted copy would be helpful if that makes it easier for the Hay Group to provide that data to the members of this committee. Commissioner, the other question that I have for you, yesterday we had Commissioner Lindsay had given his governor's budget request, and I had asked him some information as far as how are the pay raises going to be accounted for. In fact, every agency that has come before us has said the governor has requested them to include a 1.8% increase for compensation. And some of them said it wasn't their idea, it was what the governor asked them to do as part of their request. And so is that where the funds for the raises, is that where it's going to come from? Or how are the raises going to be funded?
Madam Chair, I might ask my budget director, Margaret Kelly, to come and clarify that. But I think the key thing is that the preparation of the budget with the line item for the compensation is the place you need to look, and Margaret Kelly, budget director, can clarify exactly where that is on the different agencies.
Ms. Kelly, if you could state your name for the record.
Sure. Madam Chair, Margaret Kelly, State Budget Director with MMB. So included in every agency's base budget is an assumption that there will be growth in compensation costs. And we built this into the budget looking at historical compensation costs. Over the last 10 years, how has compensation changed? And compensation changes for a variety of reasons. Compensation is a broad category. It includes salary, it includes retirement, it includes workers' comp, and health insurance, and any expense related to a compensation of an employee. And so we looked over time to see how compensation had changed, and there was a 1.8% growth in compensation costs year over year, biennium over biennium, over the period of time we looked at. And that was even during years when there were 0% changes to salaries. So we asked agencies to build that into their budget assumptions. The governor also included in his recommendations for agencies increases for operating costs overall. And for some agencies, it was a 1.8% increase in operating costs. For other agencies, it was 3% to 5%. And for other agencies, it was based on what their needs were. And so the governor's recommendations for operating increases varies agency by agency.
And Ms. Kelly, so the 1.8% is for not the commissioner pay raises, correct?
Madam Chair, the 1.8% is for operating costs in general to cover the growth in salaries, negotiated contracts, retirement cost increases, health insurance cost increases, any other operating cost increases. So the 1.8% increase in agency operating budgets in the governor's recommendations are not specific to salaries.
Okay. Well, Ms. Kelly, I'm just going to ask for a yes or no answer on that. So is the 1.8% going to go to the commissioner's salaries?
Madam Chair, I can't answer that as a yes or no. It is offered to agencies as an operating increase, and how they will use that is up to them. But clearly, their costs are going to increase by more than 1.8% across compensation and non-compensation budget items.
And Commissioner, my question for you is then, I'm assuming that you made the governor made the decision to have the 1.8% across the board because of the agency separate from the commissioner pay raises. Will the governor be submitting a second request then for funding for the commissioner raises?
Madam Chair, well, obviously after February 27th with the new forecast, the governor will be presenting a supplemental budget, and in that budget he will make some of the same requests, I'm sure, depending upon the outcome of that forecast for the 1.8% operating budget. But I'm not aware that we're going to include a separate line for the salary increases for commissioners, because that's part of the overall agency compensation budget that they have to put together.
Okay, well, what I'm doing right now, Commissioner, is I'm asking each agency that is coming before us to give a breakdown of where that 1.8% would go. I'm asking you now, since you've already been before the committee, I think it would be helpful to do that. We've had a couple of other agencies that have come before us. I assumed that the 1.8% was for the rank and file folks that work for the agencies and not for the commissioners. So I would like a detail for every single agency where that 1.8%, how it will be divided up. And then the last question that I have, and I apologize, members, for hogging the commissioner's time, but the last question I have for now is, I understand that in the agencies, they call compensation indirect costs. So as they're going through their budgeting year, they have what they call indirect costs for salary and compensation. So when they have a program, they'll bill that program indirect costs, and that's actually to pay for salaries and compensation. And it's my understanding that that indirect cost category has increased significantly over the years. And I don't know if that's true or not. So I would like it if MMB, if you could help us, and by doing some analysis for each agency of what are the indirect costs for each agency and how much has that increased for, say, from 2008 until now, since that's kind of the popular time frame that we've been looking at. I'd be curious to know how much we've been increasing that by taking money out of the programs for salary and compensation, and just be helpful to have that historical data. And with that, we've got Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, Ms. Kelly, I'm not sure which one really this pertains to, but you referenced the Hay Group study. And anytime that a study is typically requested of a consulting group like that, the requester has a defined scope and parameter for the study to be undertaken, to be responded to. And so from the governor's perspective, from his office and from his perspective, I'm wondering if you could share with us what were the scope and parameters that he requested to be answered or to responded to in terms of why the study was initiated. But what was the genesis for the study in terms of what was he really trying to get at?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, well, the study was directed by the legislative enactment in 2013 requiring that the that MMB engage this this study. And there were a number of issues related to what was at issue. One of them was the comparison of the not just commissioner salaries. There are other salaries addressed in this study as well, but the relation of the state salaries vis-a-vis other public salaries, other comparable public salaries in other states. They used, I think, six peer states to compare Minnesota to. And then the other issue was how to compare Minnesota state salaries to the private sector, and where were these salaries in relation to the private sector?
Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, then, I just have two follow-ups in terms of I'm looking at the kind of the matrix of a comparison of agency heads' salaries compared to other states. And when we take a look at the scope and parameters and we take a look at the quartiles in terms of compensation, and if you compare the 25th percentile for all agency heads across states and you compare those in, with the increases in the salaries for the agency heads for Minnesota particularly, without exception, each one lands in the top quartile for compensation. That's just an observation. And I'm just wondering, going back to my earlier comments in terms of scope and parameter, whether the enactment of the law or the legislation in previous biennium, if that was one of the intents, is to move everyone up into the top quartile. Obviously, we value the efforts of those folks, and we want to compensate them fairly. But that being said, I think that's subjective in terms of what is fair compensation. So more of an op-ed on that point, but I, if you're willing to comment to the initiative or the desirability of the overall report, was that one of the outcomes that was hoped to be achieved? But two, maybe a more pertinent question is, each one of these is a participant in a state-sponsored retirement or pension plan, and this has been asked before, but I would like to see, and through the chair's indulgence, ask for a fiscal impact in terms of what these raises would mean to the retirement pension contributions for the agency heads as it would relate to prior to the initiation of these salary increases. I think that we're not looking at the whole picture, because that, in a sense, we're looking at an agency commissioner, you being one of those, and not to pick on you, Commissioner, but it's not just about the salary on a yearly basis, but it also has ramifications, mm-hmm. the tails, if you will, going out 20, 25, 30 years. God willing, you'll have a long and productive life after you leave, you know, work in government. But to that extent, the responsibility and obligation that the government owes to you mm-hmm. as part of your pension mm-hmm. from the state is incumbent on the formula that is established to identify that pension. So to the extent that we have an actuarial establishment establishing what that cost is and the tails for each all in the aggregate the agency heads and what that has to do and how we'll have to contemplate that when we go to the pension commission and what have you. So I would greatly appreciate that as well.
Madam Chair, Representative, well, thank you for your questions. I think the first, to go back to your first point about what was hoped for, actually there was, as I understand it, there was nothing hoped for. A good study, if done properly, and if properly the consultants are doing their work, they simply tell you what's going on and how you relate to other state agencies or other states and to the private sector. So the legislation required the study. The study was done, and I think it was done in a way to present data and leave that decision to the governor and to make a decision. And as a follow-up to that, Representative, I think you'll see when, assuming we're successful in getting the report released, you'll see that there is a comparison of the benefit packages, too, for not just the salary heads, but all the different all the different jobs that are in that classification that are analyzed. So I think that'll be help address some of your points about comparing apples to apples. But then we'll have to get the information to you about what this means for the agency heads going forward on the retirement plan.
Commissioner, I didn't catch it all, but I don't know if you went over. I think Representative Albright had asked you about the pension piece of it. What is the dollar number? Because I think I've asked Ms. Roberts to kind of go over that. Ms. Roberts, can you speak to, on top of the $800,000 in pay raises, how much are we looking at for pension costs, too, for the state?
Madam Chair and members, I did a rough calculation, which was just assuming that each of these positions was in the MSRS unclassified plan. And knowing that there's a possibility, depending on the individuals, that they may have different coverage. But the employer contribution for the MSRS unclassified plan is 6% of salaries. So with the increases in salaries, the total cost would be about $74,000 per year.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe Ms. Kelly. If I understand it right, then the 1.8%, and that's annual, compensation cost increases that are being built into the budget plan. Is that correct, annually?
Ms. Kelly?
Madam Chair, Representative, 1.8% annually was what we advised agencies to assume that their compensation costs would grow. Some agencies may have used a different number because their compensation costs or their makeup of employees may be different than the average agency. For example, they may have more employees who negotiate higher contracts of nurses or troopers or what have you. So we advised agencies that overall across state government, across this 10-year period of time, 1.8% was average compensation growth, and that they should adjust that if they saw a different trend within their agency because of who they employ.
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is a projection for the coming biennium, and it precedes any contract negotiations that will become effective for this coming biennium, correct?
Ms. Kelly.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct, that it's just an estimate of how compensation could increase based on historical averages.
Representative
Rumbeck. Madam Chair, is there any connection at all? I mean, so it's a 3.6%, I guess if you can add them together. I don't know if you can add them together, but 3% for the biennium. And will that have any determinant factor in the contract negotiations? Will that be a cap that, you know, we are driving for?
Madam Chair, Representative, no. It has no relation to the upcoming negotiations. They will take place in the way they should take place, and that's two sides coming together to bargain, and we will not begin at this point or any other point other than to start where we think is appropriate.
Representative Rumbeck.
Madam Chair, maybe the page could pass out. I took a look at what's been happening to average income for the state of Minnesota, average household income. I guess it's median household income. And it's very interesting to take a look at the period from 2007 to 2013 because obviously incomes dropped dramatically in 2009 and 10. And so practically speaking, from 2007 to 2013, for the state as a whole, median income has barely increased. You know, it looks like maybe 5%. And so it's interesting to, you know, so most folks took a big reduction in income. We saw that going everywhere. And what I'm gathering is that did not occur for the state employee group. They didn't lose, and they are continuing, you know, to keep pace with where they were always going to go, more or less. So I just find that very interesting. And do you have any comment about that? Because if the rest of the folks aren't increasing in their income. You know, average growth of income is somewhat flat, somewhat stable. I mean, there's a divergence here, and you know, how do you justify that,
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, actually, we just released earlier this week the new price of government, which does, we think, a great job in comparing, on a relative basis, what has been the cost of government over time related to personal incomes. And I haven't had a chance to review it in detail. I would be happy to come back and actually talk about that with the committee. I think it's an important measure of trying to balance what is the cost of government as related to the income of citizens in Minnesota. And we think it's a good measure. Actually, it's on the downward trend in the last few years. But I think in to your point about incomes, median incomes being flat, we have seen since the through the recession and after the recession that middle and lower incomes have been flat or in some cases even down. And that's been a concern, obviously, of a lot of people. Incomes are not down for everyone. I mean, I think that the key is that the middle and lower incomes are flat or down, and that's a concern about higher pay, more opportunities for people to go to college, increase their opportunities for higher paying jobs. But I think, so our concern there is that that we speak to those issues going forward. I think that's one of the reasons that Governor Dayton has been really clear that he wanted to provide for more opportunities through education and through training, job training, to give people those opportunities to increase their jobs. But with respect to the FTE count or the salary compensation count, I think what we also have to do at the same time is provide the services that people want. And we need to do that as effectively and as efficiently as we can. And I think from my perspective as Commissioner of MMB, we will continue to try to manage and do the best we can to see that agencies are doing what they can to control costs, to be more effective, and deliver services at the best possible rate. So I think that's the goals that we will be trying to follow, and to the extent we can, you know, help deal with these issues for middle and lower income, that's an important area we have to be sensitive to. I agree.
Well, just, Madam Chair, just a comment. I guess the point is that the growth in state employee salaries does not follow the market at all, and there does, you know, there's no real interest in doing that, and get that. But to me, it's a problem.
So, Commissioner,
thank you.
Bert,
okay, Madam Chair.
I've got Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you, Commissioner. I spent some time talking to folks in my district and then did some research. I spent some time on the Minnesota State Demographic webpage. I'm sure you're very familiar with that. And I found some, what I would say, troubling information there. Talks about the median income in Minnesota, and Representative Rumbeck just talked about that. But it also talked about the number of Minnesotans living in poverty and provided a geographic distribution on a map as to where those folks live, and many of them are in districts that are represented by people who are around this table. Those folks are essentially making $23,000+ that are in the poverty level. The amount of raises, of which yours is one, are roughly 1.5 to 3.7 times the amount of just the poverty level. And my phone has been melting from emails and phone calls as to what does this say, and how do people around this table justify to people who inquire about that? You know, what's the justification, and you know, how do you respond to that? Because I know that apparently you yourself, I saw on TV, said that you weren't asking for a raise, but yet we've got these that are beyond outlandish, and I think they show a real contempt for the average Minnesotan. And if you could respond to that, please.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think it goes back to the history of these agency head compensation levels. As I mentioned the other day in one of my different testimonies, I'm losing track of which one. Well, I talked about the history of commissioner salaries, and, you know, it is an issue. It does become an issue politically, it seems. You know, as I mentioned, I think I said 1899 the last time I testified, but July of 1989 to 1997, an eight-year period, there was no change in compensation. Then there's another 3 years where there was no change, and then there's another 12 years where there's no change. So you have these periods where these salaries, they're not adjusted at all. And so, you know, if you took the, in August of 2000 was the last time they had been changed prior to the Governor Dayton's administration, there was $108,000 for an agency head in August of 2000. And if you applied the CPI to that salary to today, it would be about $148,000. It would be exactly where they're pegged about right now. The point, and that's just for inflation, and that's not any merit increase or anything like that. So there is this history of an action on these salaries, and so that's one issue. The other issue is the governor has made it very clear that he feels strongly that, even though we didn't ask for the raises, he feels strongly that we need to set a level that will be attractive going forward. This isn't just for today. It's not just for me. It's for those folks who come after me and in the future. And so to the extent we can attract folks from the private sector, or we can attract people who make a...
I'm just going to pause you for a moment. Folks, I'm just going to remind you that we have a committee rule that when you hand out a document, you need to announce who it's from. There's no writing on this at all of who this is from. Representative Runbeck, when she put out hers, she said, "This is from me." So, so Representative Sheldon, this is Representative Johnson, this is yours.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. And for the future, please make sure that you put your name on the handout before it is submitted to be distributed. Okay? Thank you. Commissioner, please proceed.
Madam Chair, thank you. So number one is to rectify this inability to make these salary changes for these positions over time. Number two is to make these positions pay comparable to the other private, the other public sector jobs in Minnesota. And number three is to try to make them have some more or a better relationship to the private sector, obviously not trying to equal the private sector. So Governor Dayton's made it clear that he believes that those folks who make a commitment to public service and for careers, or they come from the private sector, should be compensated at a level that's equal to or approximate to what other public officials make in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, I will follow up later. I am curious as to the nature of this handout we just got, though.
Sure. Commissioner, just if I could interject, you know, I did some work myself, too, to dig into the issue of comparing ourselves to other states. And Wisconsin, for example, I looked at both population and I also looked at what their general revenue situation was. And if you look at Wisconsin, we are very similar to Wisconsin, both in size and in our budget situation. And now we're about, on an average, $20,000 more than Wisconsin in pay, and some even more than that. And so I wanted to point that out to members as we proceed with this conversation. Again, Wisconsin's a good example because of the similarities, plus just similarities in their economy overall in ag versus manufacturing, everything else. So just want to point that out. Also, too, members, I'm going to be having a document handed out to you here in just a little bit. And I'll wait till it's ready to go. I'll go, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, part of what I was going to ask about has been answered, but when the request is made about the 1.8 and how that would be divided, I think the committee has to keep in mind that a few years ago we merged DOER, that's the Department of Employee Relations, into MMB, and you are very much engaged in the collective bargaining process, and to predetermine how that money in detail would be divided up, I think you'd be going down a slippery slope in terms of the collective bargaining process and maybe even some unfair, what's the term that we use? Unfair labor practice, if that's too prescribed as you go forward. But I think that's important for the committee to be aware of, and the commissioner did touch on that you do have to go into those negotiations with an open mind because it's two equals, if you will, sitting at the table.
And Representative Carlson, I'm glad you raised that because I've done some calculations. We'll have the pages handed out right now. If we are assuming that this is going to come out of the 1.8%, we're looking at some trouble spots that I assume that the governor will come back for an additional request. Because if you look at the Bureau of Mediation Services, that 1.8% would be completely consumed and then some. It's a 138.1% consumption, so over and above the 1.8% increase in compensation costs that they're asking for. You look at other agencies, the Department of Human Rights, they would consume 37.9%. The commissioner would consume 37.9% of that 1.8% compensation. Other ones, too, the mental health ombudsman, they would consume 19.9% of the 1.8% consumption. And then the Office of Higher Ed, they would consume over 70% of the commissioner's raise. The commissioner's raise would consume over 70% of that 1.8%. So, you know, as Representative Paulson pointed out, you know, that's going to play a factor into your negotiations. And obviously, I'm guessing that the governor will come back at some point with an additional request to fund these raises. Otherwise, it's eating into that compensation allocation that you've set aside. So just a comment on that. And members, I've got that handed out to you, too, so feel free to take a look at that. Representative Carlson.
I was referring in my comments, and I want to make that clear, to the collective bargaining process. Mm-hmm. You're raising a different question. I don't think that necessarily ties into my comments about going into the collective bargaining process and how the money may be prescribed.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question I had was, who handed out the U.S. Census American Community Survey? I don't see any name on that.
Representative Johnson, as I was asking the question about your handout, I reminded you that Representative Runbeck announced that that was her handout.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Yep, and I want to address the handout that I had then on the Cologne city, and that I believe is a smaller town in Representative Nash's district, Carver County, population around 1,500. And I just want to point out that in order to keep someone who they thought was very competent and doing a great job as a city administrator there, they provided them just this last year a $30,000 range to see increase his salary to $100,000. And that was a unanimous decision by their city council, which I'm sure are good folks who reviewed the information and reviewed what this person could do. So I guess it's an example I wanted to point out of in the state of Minnesota, in a smaller city, how folks recognize the importance of having a good city administrator, how you have to pay to keep one, how you have to compete with the private sector. I guess that's the long and short of it, Madam Chair, that it's important to have good managers. And as we see in this particular case, in this small town, they paid what they thought was the necessary money to keep them.
And Commissioner, can you tell me again, who made the decision to do the raises for the commissioners?
Madam Chair, Governor Dayton.
Governor did. Okay. So I think the difference here is we've got a city council versus one individual. Representative Nash, your name was mentioned, so you do get to speak. So go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Johnson. I appreciate the little bit of research you did here, but I did want to also point out this was dated in 2014. This same city administrator just resigned under heavy scrutiny for what would be considered an outlandish pay raise. And myself being a former mayor, we did give out pay raises, but we never gave out anything like that. So I just think that it's a little disingenuous to make the correlation because the people of the city of Cologne and the community put the city council under heavy scrutiny, many of whom lost their jobs as an elected official as a result of this decision. So I think it's a germane point to make. So thank you for this, though.
Okay, we've got Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morning, Mr. Commissioner. Sometime over the last week or two, the governor came out and expressed that in order to for the government to retain good qualified people into these commissioners' positions, that they have to keep up with salaries. And I understand that. But the one question I do have is that since the governor has set up his own administration, so he's been in there, 5 years now, how many commissioners have left because of, I mean, I guess I can't say because of salary, but how many commissioners have actually left their positions?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know that exactly. I do know that several commissioners have left for private sector jobs. In fact, my predecessor here at the MMB, Jim Showalter, whom you all know very well, left to go to the private sector. And as you fairly mentioned, it's a complex family decision. It's a personal decision that people make for a host of reasons. Jim Showalter had a great career, 20 years at MMB, the last four of which as commissioner. And so, you know, that's a decision he can talk about. I won't speak for Jim Showalter, but there have been several other commissioners that have left, but I don't have their particular story. So I think, though, that the point of that is it's really looking in the future to what kind of people we're going to attract in the future. I mean, clearly I'm not going to leave one way or the other unless you all think that maybe I should at some point. But I like the job. I like working for the governor. And so that's a personal decision I'm making about staying here or not staying here based on salary. But other people make different decisions. Those are family decisions. But clearly the governor felt that in order in the future to go forward and to continue to keep folks here that are working well and to attract new people, not just for this administration, this is for future administrations as well, to try to get these salaries back up to a level where they should be. And so that was his thinking, was let's get the bar back up, which will help us retain and attract new talent.
Representative Anderson.
And Madam Chair, thank you for that answer. And the former commissioner did a really good job, and I appreciate you bringing that up. I have an insider trading question for you, because you are the current acting commissioner of MMB. When were you notified personally of this salary increase?
A commissioner.
Madam Chair, you know, the last 6 or 7 weeks have been kind of a blur for me personally. I've been kind of busy, and I don't actually recall when it occurred. I'd have to go back and think about that. I just don't remember.
And Madam Chair, are we talking January, February, just ballpark? I don't need a specific day, but was it early on after the first of the year, or?
It was around the end of the year, first of the year, as the governor was putting together his final determination. He was making those decisions the end of the year and the beginning of January, and I don't recall. Sometime during that time frame, I just don't recall, to be honest.
And Madam Chair, just a question for you, Madam Chair. When were we notified as a legislature that this was coming down the pike? I'm trying to get a correlation of the time frame here.
Sure. So the governor did the raises on January 5th of 2015. By law, he's required to notify the legislature within 30 days. We received notification on February 4th that the raises were issued on January 5th.
Okay. So that was the 30-day time frame.
Yep.
Thank you.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I was going to let it go, but I have to have the answer for my own brain here. When the legislature commissions something and the taxpayers pay for something, do we pay for something? And I'm going back to the Hayes report, I guess. We did get the results of that, did we not? I mean, we paid for something, and I don't want to know their proprietary processes for coming out to the results of that study, but didn't we get the results of the study, and don't we have access to the results of the study? Because otherwise, why would we pay for that?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, well, certainly MMB has access to that report. It was presented to MMB, and the governor does. And are you speaking in terms of the legislature to have access to the report?
Representative Howe.
It's taxpayer dollars. I don't understand why taxpayers don't have access to that data. And we don't care about the specific who got paid what and how that works, but the aggregate summary data that the taxpayers paid for, I would have to believe that we should, when we enter into that agreement, have access to the summary data.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, well, I would agree with you. In fact, that's why we were talking with the company to see if they'll release their proprietary rights to the data. Because what they do, unless a report is specifically designed to be released to the public, what many companies do in these compensation studies is include fairly confidential or detailed information about how that company has access to this information, how they make their comparison. I mean, it really is their work product, and so they want to protect that, and they have a right to do so under the law. But so we're asking them to release their right to protect that confidential data and or proprietary data so that we can release it to you.
Representative Howe.
Well, Commissioner, I really don't care about the proprietary data. I'm just talking about the summary data that doesn't get into their proprietary information. I don't think the public really cares how they come up with the answer. I mean, that's a whole other question that I think is something. But I would think that the summary data should be, and maybe that's just my simple public way of looking at things. But it seems like when we pay for something, and I understand MMB has access to it, but we should at least get the aggregate summary data that we should be able to look at that doesn't disclose anybody's personal stuff. But thank you.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting. I listened to Representative Howe talk about proprietary data, and I've been trying for a long time to find out where our public dollars actually go to the HMOs for the services that they do for us, because we need to know if we're getting a cost, good value for our buck, and we don't have the data we need. So that's a side point, but we've been bouncing back and forth here on between FTEs and salaries. So as far as FTEs, I just want to say that our goal in government is that we're right-sized, and that means that the services that people in the state need are there for them. And I know that, and as we've been cutting back for budgetary reasons over the last several years, we've gotten a little bit wrong-sized. And a small example would be that when you seek to transfer a car title, you sometimes have to wait up to 6 months. And why is that? Because they don't have enough staff. The sex offender program, we've been told we just don't have enough staff there to do the care that we need. Child protection, we're finding out that it's understaffed at the county level and at the state level to be able to do the services that we need. These things are just some of the examples of how we need to have it right size. So that's the FTEs part. As far as the salaries go, I think that Representative Runback gave us this form about the average income in Minnesota, and she's showing it at almost $61,000. And we have a number from the state government saying that the average salary of the ordinary person in state government with the benefits attached, and this number that is here at $61,000 is not with that, is but with the benefits attached is $68,000. I think they're comparable. I don't think that that we're out of line in that. And then when we turn to commissioners and the situation we're talking now with the increase to the agency heads, number one, we had that private study commissioned so that we'd find out what other states do and what private market does and what's fair for this area. And they established some maximums, and we didn't go to the maximums. It's very that's what we wanted to know. We wanted to know what's going on out there. So when you draw on Wisconsin, a similar size, similar budget, and I would say only $20,000 more than their salaries, because we're doing this right now, and we don't know what they're doing right now, although I assume nothing since they have a big budget hole. So I think that that's actually considered quite comparable. As we were told, the CPI from 2000 carried forward with the salaries now compared to 2000 is simply for inflation. There's nothing extravagant about it. It's simply the inflationary increase since 2000. And then I would just draw the last point too, that some of this city manager in Plymouth is $142,800. The Wayzata superintendent of schools is $187,000. The Prior Lake city manager is $147,000. The Prior Lake superintendent is $167,000. The Waconia city administrator is $116,000. And these all have smaller budgets than the commissioners that we're talking about here. Some of them extremely smaller budgets, and almost all those salaries are more than we're giving out to our commissioners. So I think we just need to bring some perspective to this all.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I hate to divulge this, but as an economist, I really think it's not fiscally responsible when we do our budgets in the state that we adjust our revenue for inflation but not our costs. And it would be really nice to have realistic budgets where we look at inflation adjusted costs to make our decision making. The other thing, I'm really glad that Representative brought up poverty. So if we really do care about poverty and addressing poverty, I really think we should talk about income distribution and taxes. And it's not appropriate to this committee, but I'm glad you're concerned and hope that we can continue those conversations.
Representative Runbeck.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on Representative Anderson talking about turnover, and the rate of turnover is the best measurement of satisfaction with the job. And so I'm just, Commissioner, or somebody follow the turnover rates within state government, and could we compare that to the private sector? And I think, you know, the salary thing is very, very much connected. But I just, if you have that information, it'd be very, very interesting.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, I don't have that with me. We obviously follow the attrition rates, but we'll take a look at comparing that to the private sector. But, you know, that's also another difficult situation. Every job I left was because the next job was better. It wasn't because I was dissatisfied with the one that I had. So, I mean, we can look at attrition rates and try to get you that data, but it still leaves open some tough questions, I think. Let me just, Madam Chair, if I might, just on the request for the report. The report itself has proprietary data within the report itself, and so that's the challenge for the company, is to release their rights to the proprietary data, or, as Madam Chair suggested, redacting it. But so that's why it's not readily available to be released until they release that claim of proprietary data. Had they not included that proprietary data within the report itself, we wouldn't have quite the same issue. So that's what we're trying to clear up with the company.
Representative Howe.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. But my question, to that point then, why would we ever sign an agreement where we don't have the body that requests the study, why would we sign an agreement where we don't have access to the information? And I guess that's my frustration, is the legislature asked for the study, and we can't have access to the data. And I guess that's my frustration there, Commissioner.
And Representative Howe, I'm glad you made that point. I think that we need to have a review of how we do state contracts in general, not just on this issue, but as a whole. With that, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Representative Schultz's question is actually appropriate. But unfortunately, when I look at the growth of government spending, it is actually averaged more than double the inflation over the last 20 years or so, which indicates that we really looked at how we've dealt with those cost factors. But as a person who deals with nonprofit organizations and others, we struggle with the same thing about how do we pay our top employees. And one of the things that we realize is that when we do a cost of living increase across the board, we actually increase the gap between the lowest paid and the highest paid. And as you continue to do that on a regular basis, what you do is you put more and more of your percentage of your income for space and salary up at the top end. And so I think we need to be also very cautious about that, because as a nonprofit and oftentimes as government, we generally don't and are unable to pay commensurate to private sector. And so we oftentimes lose people to those areas. So I just think it's something for us to remember that we are in a activity that is not always able to compete with the for-profit group, and that upper salaries do have an impact in the bottom line as well. Thank you.
Representative Lunin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to respond to some of the comments made earlier when Representative Lane talked about government positions and things taking a long time to happen. And then the response is that we don't have enough employees. I can tell you, having spent 32 years in the private sector, when that happened in my business, when I took a look at it, the vast majority of the time I didn't find out that or discover that I didn't have enough employees. I discovered that I had the wrong employees, that the skill sets didn't match the tasks that needed to be done. And it was just a matter of leadership. The as far as the numbers following inflation, Representative Schultz, as an economist, I'm assuming you know that the cost of services and goods is what actually causes inflation. So ratcheting up the cost of government is one of the drivers in inflation. I agree with Representative Lane that the position she cited, I was a member of the school board for several terms, that the positions she cited are out of line on how they're being paid. And what happens in that discussion is a classic example of what I saw on the school board is that a district would come in and negotiate and they would say, well, the neighboring districts are giving X percent raise. And so we were expected to chase that. Then when we gave that, when we tried to chase that, that neighboring district in the next negotiating session said, well, this, the Shakopee School District is paying this much per position. So that's just a, ends up being a negotiating tactic. That's just a shell game. And then on the report, Commissioner, the product we purchased was the result of the report, would be my assumption. I guess I'll be surprised if that isn't it. We didn't purchase the mechanics of how the report was filed, so we should be able to get have access to the results. That should that should not be proprietary at all. Would that be a fair assessment?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, no, the report contains proprietary information from the company that they have a right to. There's other proprietary information, as you understand, the company has a whole database and a whole set of experts to do their work that's not engaged with this report. It's just that this report encompasses some of their what they consider to be their proprietary information. And we agree with you. We want it released. We're asking them to release it. And assuming we can get that done, we'll get it to you as soon as we can.
Representative Lewin.
Well, Madam Chair, this feels like we bought a car we're not allowed to drive.
Okay. I have no one else on the list. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as we go forward on this, with this discussion that's been going on, this morning as I was eating my breakfast, I was reading my morning paper, and there was an article in the editorial, actually, and they were talking about this very issue about the governor's pay or the commissioner's pay raises, and they talked about if they had just gotten a 2% raise, I mean, they've been frozen for 12 years. If they had just gotten a 2% raise for the last 12 years, they'd be making more than what they're making with the raises. And this part of this that we're going on, it came out of 2 years ago, 2013, the state government finance bill, the compensation council report that was put in there, and the part of that was to raise the range that the governor can pay his people to, again, so we can attract good people. And that seems to be always, I hear that from business, that we have to pay these people these extraordinary salaries, sometimes 400 times more than what the average employee makes that works for them, you know, because we have to attract good people. Well, the state of Minnesota has to attract good people. We're trying to run the state like a business to get the good people that we need to run the business so we can run it as at an efficient manner, and yet now we're screaming about this that when we try and do this. It seems a little incongruous in my mind. I mean, we're talking about this that we save money. We've got people that have saved money over the years. They're working to try and do that. We could put a bunch of slugs in there and pay them nothing, and then we scream when our government is not running right. So I mean, it's I think this is just an interesting conversation we're having here today.
Well, we've got to get back on the 2% because there's some disagreement on that. I've got Representative Howe, Albright, and Runbeck, and then we'll close her out here. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've got something that's bothering me a little bit, Commissioner, and I'm hoping you can bring some clarity to me. A few months back, and I can't remember exactly when, but I was delving into the veterans hearing process, and I wanted to know, I actually asked MMB to provide me the information as how many of our veterans that got hired in state employment were actually let go before they finished their probation, and how many veterans hearings we actually did. And from the results I got, or the answer I got, that it wasn't any more than the standard general population of state employees. So I find it surprising now that we're actually asking for a full-time employee to answer the questions and the issues that come up with veterans hearings. And for my take on that is, I'm questioning how that process is going to work, because I believe the experts in how the veterans hearing process works and how we should handle veterans should come out of the Department of Veterans Affairs. I find it a little disingenuous that the expert's going to reside over an MMB or administration, wherever, when really I think the expert should reside over in Department of Veterans Affairs, because whatever this person puts out over here is going to have to coordinate or consult those experts over there in the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I was asking the Department of Veterans Affairs how many of these veterans hearings actually go on. They told me there's not very many. They responded to me in state governments less than a half dozen a year. So, and those that do, generally speaking, either go through the bargaining committee, through the bargaining process, and never really get to the veterans hearing. And a lot of those end up going through the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs and through that process. So I guess I'm really struggling with the point that we're going to put this FTE here when we got the experts over in Department of Veterans Affairs.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, well, you're exactly correct, and wanted to make sure we are concerned to make sure that the process is uniform, consistent throughout state government. With 36,000 employees, the MMB is the head HR agency, and we wanted to make sure that these processes were uniform and consistent throughout. Of course, FTE, that person would utilize the talents and the expertise at the Veterans Affairs Department. But I think our goal at MMB, in some of these cases where there's these functions that are dispersed across the agencies, but there's not enough of these things for one person in each agency to have this job responsibility and to remain trained for it at all times, we felt the better process was to provide a uniform, consistent process, and obviously that person will be doing other things at MMB besides these hearings, in addition to doing the hearing process for the veteran. So I'll try to get more information to you to make sure that process makes sense for you.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Commissioner, but I still believe that I think the expertise already exists over in the Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
I'll pass, Madam Chair.
Okay. With that, members, we're going to stop here for today. We've given you a lot of homework, Commissioner, and we look forward to getting that information. As you see, a lot of the members are interested in the Hay Report. You know, this all was brought about from the 2013 State Government Finance Bill. DFL majorities in both the House and Senate gave the authority to the governor to do these pay raises. I would gather and guess, based upon the comments that I've heard from some of the Democrat colleagues in the House and in the Senate, that they never anticipated that we would be seeing a 43% increase in these salaries. With that, I think that there's going to be some changes made on this front, and I'm looking forward to that. I do want to thank you for your public service. As you mentioned, in Ways and Means, it was an honor to be asked by the governor to do this job. And I think if you look around this table, none of us are in it for the financial compensation. Certainly not Representative Carlson and Representative Kahn, since they've been in service for over, 30 years?
43.
Okay. You're counting, right?
You're not helping.
And so, but I think at the end of the day, it is our responsibility to be mindful of how we're spending state dollars, because we're not putting out a product and selling it and getting the revenue. Our revenue source is the taxpayers of Minnesota, every single one of them. And I know when they heard the news in December that we were seeing a $1 billion surplus, none of them ever imagined that those dollars would go to pay raises
for the governor's cabinet. So having said that, I thank you for what you're doing. I look forward to the data that you're going to provide us. But it is our responsibility, in particular, for the State Government Finance Committee to look at these issues. We're responsible for a lot of the different commissioners and their agencies. So this is a prime responsibility of our committee. We have a lot of homework ahead of us in digging into these issues to make sure that we're good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars. So with that, members, we are adjourned.